It's Wednesday, January 13th, 2010, and you're listening to episode 177 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 1 hour and 10 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name's Chad.
This is Wayne.
And my name is Pat.
What are we drinking today?
I stopped by and got one of the local wineries, a port from the local winery. It's actually Mount Pleasant.
Mount Pleasant, yes.
I don't know exactly where it is, but it's somewhere in
It is in Appletanius Augustus.
Chad, I want you to tell me what's on
Augusta, Missouri.
I want you to tell me what's on the back of that wine bottle, because that's going to lead into my public service announcement rant.
2004 vintage. So
that's
the year. I know. I'm saying it's the year. So what they have on the back is the year of the rover, which I guess was 2004. And they have the Mars rover on the back. There's nothing else on the bottle to indicate any kind of spaciness. They have an imprint.
It's very atypical of what's usually on the back of a wine or a port wine.
And
looking for a description, it's a
as of the recording of this podcast, there's a problem with the Mars rover.
It's stuck.
It's stuck. Okay.
Again.
Now, if you guys will recall, about a year ago, I was on a cruise and happened to be there with Larry Ronzai, something like that, who's a guy fairly high up in Mayfair. And he talked about how they were switching to clamshell packaging.
Oh, God. And, big mistake. Yeah. I will hate you forever. Well, I hate that.
And so on behalf of the community.
This is good port.
I, on the air, told him, do not do this. Yes. Stick with blister packs or boxes. Clamshell packaging is horrible for reasons I went over in that episode and every human being knows, so I won't reiterate it. But
it's dangerous.
I know there are some video game developers that listen to this podcast. And so I'm going to go on another rant that is completely selfish, but I feel is a service
public
to the community.
Service message. Yes. That has something to do with the Mars rover.
All right, so Mass Effect 2 is coming out.
This has nothing to do with the Mars rover.
Oh, no, it will sort of. It has. You'll understand the connection here in a minute. Just let me work up to it.
Go for it.
All right, so Mass Effect 2 is coming out in a couple weeks, right? I decided to replay through Mass Effect 1 for two reasons. Reason one is I beat Mass Effect about 2 years ago and didn't remember the game. Reason two is because in Mass Effect 2, they're carrying over a lot of your choices from Mass Effect 1, so I wanted to make sure that I had made choices that I was willing to live with in Mass Effect 2 and 3.
Mm-hmm.
While I'm playing the game, part of the game is you land on planets with this little rover of your own called the Mako, where you have to explore the planets and find stuff. And you unlock different missions and things like that, but which I'm fine with. It didn't bother me. A lot of people found it boring.
It bothered me. It was incredibly boring.
I understand. The reason it worked for me is because I have my Xbox hooked up to my Windows Media Center on my laptop, and I play Ghetto Rap while I'm cruising
in
these
your
planets.
Hoopy.
Yes.
Hoopy, yeah.
And it just works. And I'm doing drive-bys on Geth.
Sure.
And, you know, slanging yayo out to the migrant fleet. And it
you
works.
So white. You are the whitest man I know.
I was going to say, my Mako drive goes fine with Haydn, I don't know.
You are so white.
I was going to say, that's a pretty big title to give Dan when Pat and I are both sitting right here, too.
I
think we're all in the running for most white guy.
I haven't seen you dance yet. And I think that if I... yeah, you're white.
Yep. all right. Now, here's the thing.
This isn't a video episode.
Here's where my public service announcement is. For those of you listening to this show that may be involved in video game development, specifically level development, or know somebody is, or are related to somebody who is, or have read the credits and seen somebody who is, for God's sake, impassibility does not make something interesting. When you are on a map and you see a point you are supposed to get to, and it is right f-ing there, and you can't get to it because the mountain is too steep on 270 degrees, and you have to drive halfway up the map to find a little sweet spot where you can kind of nudge over one little crevice to hit a path to get up there to a point you saw from the very beginning, that is not fun. That is annoying. The biggest offender for this was not Mass Effect. Mass Effect only does it on a couple planets. The biggest offender for this that I've played personally was Warhammer Online.
I was going to say WoW.
No, I disagree with WoW. because I used to like go to the places you're not supposed to go. Me and a friend of mine in my guild, that was kind of our hobby, the game within the game, is that we would go to places that you were not allowed to go to, and we'd find like terrain exploits. We'd watch videos on YouTube, see how to do terrain exploits, get to places that weren't open yet, and that sort of thing. But WoW is surprisingly open. Now, on the face of it, yes, they definitely channel you and they box canyon you and they, but I remember going up mountains that you could just walk to, not using terrain exploits. And I'm sitting on the border between two zones and I look down and I'm going from a desert to a forest and I look down and there is a solid line. One half of it is the red of the desert. The other half of it is the green of the forest. And it is a solid geometric line.
I'm not even talking about being funneled. I don't mind being funneled.
You don't?
Well, okay, it is. Oh, no, I check that back. I do mind it, but that's not what this rant is about.
Writing that one down, filing away for later. Oh, yeah.
But what I'm complaining about is something like, you're walking along, and there's a quest objective, and it's right there. You can see it. It's on a pedestal, it's in a pit, it's at the top of a mountain, I don't know what.
On the other side of a door that's halfway off its hinges that you can't open.
Yeah, or something
that's
like
a pet peeve
that.
Of mine.
Yes, and it's right there. If this was an RPG, if this was a real thing, you could worm your way in there, reach out with a coat hanger, and pull it to yourself.
Like in Fallout 3, where there's something on the other side of this door, and you know it's on the other side of the door because the door is rotting off of its hinges, and it's broken, and it has holes that you can stick your arm through and undo the latch on it, but it still takes like a level 100 lockpicking to open
Warhammer up. Warhammer Online did this all the time, where it's like, here's the objective, but to get there, I have to run to the far opposite end of the map, take this bridge down through some hostile orc village, go up this mountain, fight through these things, go around this. There's 20 different paths, only one of them's right, and then finally I get to the objective.
Well, luckily no one plays Warhammer.
No, not anymore.
And it's even more annoying if you have the full map and you can see on the map that I am 5 feet from this.
You know what's odd about that, Warhammer in general? Because that was my first MMO. That's the first one I'd ever played. So I actually
could have done worse.
Well, that's true. I actually enjoyed it until you got to the final.
Pat, it was a moment of pride. I want you to know that the first time we heard you on Vent cussing about terrible healers, Chad and I had this proud parent moment. And I phoned Chad. I said, Chad, his rage makes me strong.
But what I was going to say is the odd thing about it is since it was my first experience, I still occasionally, I have dreams about Warhammer. Like,
really?
I dream about
it's
that MMO.
My little boy grew up, he hated his healers.
Yeah, I know. I even caught him bitching about the tank one time.
Yeah.
Damn tank can't hold aggro. It's like, oh, he's aggro.
It's his first
and it was so funny because before that,
I wanted to rush over with a video camera.
Like, what was that?
Oh, look,
I think
he's
that was
rage
like,
quitting. Oh,
yeah,
so
it's like, that was a little over a year ago. But a little over a year ago, I didn't know what any of these terms. And I'm like, what are you talking about? What the hell is aggro? It's something I'd seen
is
on like Penny Arcane. And I'm like, I don't understand what this means. What do you mean tanking? What do you mean he's going to kite him? What? And now I'm like, come on, can't these people do this?
I remember.
Come on, more DPS. Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, what are you, a noob?
I remember those moments in my first MMO where everyone's just throwing out these terms expecting you to understand it, and it's like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Everybody's new at least once.
And that's every MMO has its own terminology, too.
Totally.
Yeah. So, like, when you guys came over to City of Heroes, we're using terms you guys don't know.
Place abbreviations. Looking for a party for LBJ. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know why Lyndon Johnson.
LBJ? LBJ?
See, for me, that just
epic
means
raid.
It's a certain type
Who's
of something.
Who's the sub-boss? Hoover? Come on.
But seriously, though, every MMO you go to.
LBJ?
It was the first three letters that came to mind.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
fine.
I'm
looking
file
for,
that one
for
away
FDR.
FDL, okay, that's better.
Likes funneling, LBJ, okay, yeah. Castor oil. Okay, I'm not putting together a profile here.
All right, anyway, let's get down to role-playing games. We've got two topics we're going to talk about today that go hand in hand, and I think there's going to be some overlap between them because some of the things we're going to put under one category really apply to both. What we're going to talk about today is the player toolbox and the GM toolbox. Now, what we mean by the toolbox is these are the little tips, tricks, or possibly physical objects that you as a player or game master can bring into the game to help improve the experience. All right, if you're a game master, these are the tricks you bring to help keep the plot going, keep it interesting. If you're,
and these could be different from person to person.
Oh, absolutely. Person. Yeah. And some of them are going to be specific to the person. Yeah. Some of them will be specific to the game. Yeah. Some of them will be specific to a game system. Some
like
of them...
I think that your toolbox of physical items, not necessarily conceptual items, but physical right. items will be very different than mine.
Well, and I think also from group to group, this is going to vary heavily because there may be a group where, look, we do a lot of combat. And so something to help you track initiative, and I've got a few ideas mm-hmm. for that, is going to be really important. There may be another group that just does real rules, light, story yeah. stick type games where that's not an important thing. You know, a dungeon mapper will do them no good. Mm-hmm. But I still figure we can throw out the tools that we've come up with, the tools that we use. Nothing, Pat? Nothing
no,
at
I'm
all?
Just, okay. I'm just moving.
All right. He can find something perverted in LBJ, but not in... Anyway.
You know, I didn't even know what you said. I wasn't listening.
He's talking about his tool.
So, you yeah. and the audience bowl.
We can throw out some of these options here. And I figure there's something here that will work for everybody. So you guys want to do players or game masters first?
I want to do game masters.
Start with game masters.
My game master I list is a lot bigger, and my player list is mostly on the game masters.
We talk a lot about the DM toolbox. So yeah, I think we should go with that.
Okay, let's talk about the game master then, and we'll come back.
Do we want to do physical items first? Or
Where do you want to start? Just throw something out, and we'll work with that.
Well, the first thing I have thrown out is not a physical item, and it's a conceptual item in my metaphorical toolkit that I always use, and I call it my moment of zen. I need 5 to 10 minutes before the game to collect my thoughts. And it comes off that when I describe my GMing style, that I don't do any planning, and I just show up to the game and sit down, and I just start barfing.
4 hours of obstruction, and that's
yeah,
a lot.
Yeah, and exactly. And I press A not to die, and you know, quick time events too. But anyway, I actually do a lot of planning over the course of the week. I am constantly thinking about the game, and I'm constantly coming up with hooks and plot twists and scenes that I want played out, and it's all random in a way. I want this to happen, and I want this to happen. I want this to happen in this way, but they're not interconnected. And I have all these different ideas. And what I need is I need 5 minutes by myself before the game starts, just to bring everything together, just to kind of pull it all together. And I tell my players up front too. It's like, okay, guys, we ready? I need 5 minutes of zen. I'll be right back. I go into another room, or I go outside on the porch, and I just kind of sit there and I just collect myself and collect my thoughts. And I think that it's a lot like a heavy note GM organizing his notes before the game, because I have notes. They're just all in my head.
You know, something I would add into that moment of zen is that the moment of zen can occur whenever you need it to. Mm-hmm. The snack break, the bathroom break, these are all wonderful moments that if you need to recollect your thoughts, mm-hmm. the players have done something that's confused you. You've just gotten distracted by something. You've kind of lost your train of thought. You can take those moments of zen, not just before the game, but during the game. I remember when I was working for General Motors Insurance years ago, they hired the psychologist. I won't bore you guys a long story. They hired a guy to basically come in and look at the psychology of why people buy auto insurance and how they shop. Mm-hmm. Because his general thesis was that the reasons people think they do things are not the reasons they really do them. And his example was he'd done some work for Chrysler, and he'd come up with all these reasons when you did focus studies on how people said they selected a car, yet the car they ended up buying almost never matched those criteria. And one of the things he threw out there was he said one of the main reasons people go to the bathroom is to get away from the world.
That makes complete sense to me.
You know, because
speaking as someone who read the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy in a bathroom, yeah, I agree with that.
It's not that I disagree with it, that I don't think people do. That's not for me.
My point
I take
being
care
that,
of business. Well, and, I get you know, out.
And at the time, that was my thought too. Is I'm like, no, I go in there because I need to offload some cargo. It's not because
you need to download.
But you know, but what I came to find, you know, as the years went by, is it started to make more and more sense. Because particularly when I was still working office jobs, when I just couldn't put up with people anymore, yeah, maybe I really had to go to the bathroom. But I would be happiest if nobody else was in there. Because it'd just be a moment to breathe where I have that moment of space. You can do the exact same thing in your role-playing game. You've got all these distractions. People at the table want your attention, asking you questions, rolling dice, playing with their phones, whatever it is they're doing. If you need to recollect your thoughts, you need that moment of zen, whether it's before the game or in the middle of the game, take that break. Go get a snack. Go to the bathroom. Step outside. Go someplace people aren't going to follow and just breathe for a moment. I'm going to expand that to throw out a second thought here.
Do you know where we got the moment of zen? Do you remember that story? We had a game master when we were teenagers named Paul, and I might have said this story.
Yeah, I think it was actually last week.
Yeah, well, basically a guy goes to the bathroom before each game.
Falls asleep on the bathroom floor.
Yeah, and it's upstairs and we're in the basement. We're screaming at after half an hour, we start screaming at him. Just get your ass down here.
Yeah, he would always come back with a game.
And yeah, and it worked.
I can't explain the process. Yeah. He would go up there basically saying he's going to take a dump. He would fall asleep on the bathroom floor. Half an hour later, we'd yell at the guy to come back down, and he'd have a great game.
Yeah.
I don't know how this process works. I can't explain to you.
That's why the GM toolkit is to the individual. It's not something that is a cookie cutter for everybody, I guess.
But I was going to say, along those same lines, though, expanding this a little bit, also give yourself permission to take a week off.
That is very important.
Yes. As a game master, I feel a certain amount of pressure from my players to come in and entertain. Mm-hmm. I feel even more pressure probably from myself that I have to be there every week with a game. And if I've had a busy week, I've been distracted by a video game, I've had some drama, I've just been busy with something else, whatever. But for some reason, the game just didn't get written, or I'm having writer's block and up coming up with an idea. I'm in a bad mood. I'm just not prepared to...
And we've seen it with you, Dan. Even if you're dead on, you have it. You're overly hard on yourself sometimes to the point that you need a week off because you're your biggest critic by far.
And so give yourself permission. And good heavens, if you're players, this is just a note of courtesy. Don't be an ass if they ask for that. If they come and say, look, this week I'm not going to run a game. I'm just not feeling it. I brought a board game instead, or let's go upstairs and play Wii bowling or whatever it is your group does.
Real life bowling.
Real life bowling. Yeah. I hear those still exist. You know, whatever it is your group does.
Past the leagues.
Then give yourself the permission to do that.
I think that's very important too. I mean, I've found it to be true in my games and the games I've ran stuff. If you're just not feeling it, it doesn't matter why. And it doesn't matter, you know, what the situation is. If you're not feeling it and you're running the game, game's going to suck. I mean, the game is really going to suck. If you just don't have anything for that week, or if you just don't have that mojo, that push, it is better to do something that is guaranteed fun for your group than to try to push through and muddle through because you feel obligated. You should never feel obligated. It's a game. You do it because you have fun.
Wayne, give me one.
All right. I'm going to go with something a little more physical or tangible, I guess. It's something we've talked about quite a few times, and that is a list of potential names. But I do not just people. So I tend to be a laptop GM. I have a ton of files on my laptop at any given point that I can just access and source to the game. I have a list of names for people. I have a list of names of cities. I have a list of NPC concepts, a list of city descriptions. So at any point when something comes up, I can just throw out a name and keep flowing without people calling me on it.
You threw out several things there. Let me give each one of them the love and attention they deserve. The list of names speaks for itself. Mm-hmm. But as you also said, a list of quirks or personalities you can plug and play. They walk into the store. You need a shopkeeper. You don't just have a name for them. You cross off personality quirk number 13 or whatever. And you have a random NPC. You have a random town description.
And what I do in my file, since I do it, like I said, I do it on a laptop, I'll actually type in after I've thrown it out there. I'll type in a tiny little description to remind me of who I gave that to. So I don't give the same name or the same quirk to multiple different ones without realizing it.
Something I would add on top of that that I have used is I sometimes also have plug-and-play plot elements. What I mean by that is I might have a list of little subplot ideas. For example, if the game's starting to slow down, the party's gone completely a different direction than I expected, and I just need to keep the game going for a little bit longer. They just need a side plot. There's 100 reasons to need it. I will have 4 or 5 sentences for maybe half a dozen plot points where I can just check something off and say, okay, they're going to run into a guy who's going to try and steal some money from them to feed his family, and then it's going to turn out that he needs to feed his family because this group of raiders has been taking all their has been burning their crops and farmlands, and let the players deal with this. and all these little things where it's, as Chad calls it, make something blow up. Wayne, the other thing you mentioned that I think is, assuming you're not distracted by it or hiding behind it, is a wonderful asset, is you mentioned the laptop.
Mm-hmm. I use it as a great big file folder.
For me, it's a great file folder because it's easier for me to find files and find items on a laptop than it is a notebook. I still prefer paper just because it doesn't obstruct my view of the players.
And I think there's less distractions with paper as well.
Well, but one thing you can get out of a laptop you can't get out of paper is an internet connection. Now, that can be distracting, but if they went somewhere you didn't expect and real quick you need access to a random name generator, pictures, you're like, oh man, the castle looks like the castle.
Is a double-edged sword. It's very good. Yes, random name generator. This is castle. This is the street. This is the map. This is the whatever.
Maps is another great one you can pull.
Maps is actually on my list of things to have ready and waiting.
You have to be very careful with that, because on the other hand, you do a Google image search for castle. Oh, well, these are all European castles. I wanted a Middle Eastern castle. Okay, I got to refine my Google search. Middle Eastern. Oh, now these are all like mosques and minarets. This isn't what I wanted.
Oh, yeah, certainly.
And then suddenly, next thing you know, it's 20 minutes later and you have your players have their phones out and they're drooling on them.
Well, yeah, I would not trust myself to have internet while trying to run a game, because I do know that I'm that type of person that when I start looking for something, I tend to link wonder a lot.
Well, and you know, something that Wayne, going back to the idea you expressed before that could potentially help with that, is instead of having an internet connection, go beyond just your NPCs and your cities, but have pictures, have maps. I mean, have whole accordion files of all kinds of different resources. And you don't want to slow down the game while you're page flipping through 200 pages of BS trying to find one little thing.
Right.
But have an accordion file with some resources in it that you can use to flesh things out.
That was actually something that was definitively on my list, was having maps ready, because those always come in handy. If players don't necessarily know the landscape, they're trying to figure out what town to go to, where to go to, it's always handy to just say, okay, here it is visually.
Probably the biggest thing that I've used was having lists of names, because you know, it's something that you can point to very quickly without having to be just caught unaware. That's what the point of all these are, is to help to facilitate the game, to keep it flowing, and you know, to try to counter as little breakup as possible. So
I think that Pat nails it on the head. When you're picking your tools, whether they're physical or conceptual.
Yeah, these lists can be in your head if you can remember them.
Well, you have to remember their purpose. The purpose is not necessarily to make things easier on you. The purpose is to keep the game going, to keep the flow going. So if you have a list of traits that's 20 pages long, you know, that's cool. That's pretty comprehensive. But if you're the type of person to where you would start flipping through this list till you found the exact right one, that's going to break up the flow. It would be better not to have it.
Yeah.
I will agree with what you said, though. I would rephrase it slightly. And I think this is probably even how you meant
it. Oh, you don't like my phrasing now. Nope. I see how it
is. I don't like your phrasing one bit.
I don't like your face, man.
I would say that...
Your white, white face.
I'm going to be slanging yayo in street corners now.
You guys are lucky I'm so black.
So, but I would
I'm the Chris Mice of Fear the Boot. Hey, I'm bald. I'm black. What do you want?
I would rephrase it a little bit to say, certainly the reason you're doing this is at first to make the game easier for you, but if at any point it's slowing down or screwing up the game, you've done something wrong.
Yeah, one of the reasons I do is I don't want my players to realize that I never had a name for that NPC, because they're immediately going to think that can't be an important person.
Right along those lines, keep in mind, the players do not know anything you haven't declared.
Yep.
And that's very empowering once you fully accept what that means.
My entire suggestion on that is listen to what they're saying, and if what they're suggesting is more interesting than what you're doing, that could be what you're doing. If they're getting really into your side plot, maybe that should be your main plot.
Or if there's an NPC they've latched on to. There was a character in a D&D game I ran several years ago. It was a little girl. She was supposed to be a plot point, but she wasn't a central plot point. But we were playing with a woman by the name of Sherry, who had this big maternal instinct thing going on and is latched onto this little girl. And suddenly this little girl became a much more central plot point and a much more major character than I had ever intended.
Yeah, we had that exact same thing in our rotating GM game where Pat got hooked onto the little girl. She was not meant to be a major
but
character
but that wasn't
at all.
A maternal instinct.
You don't have to roll.
Pat rolled his eyes at me.
Mm-hmm. You don't have to roll anything. Is another thing I bring in the toolbox. if you have a guy who's about to die and you don't want this character dying, I'm not talking NPCs because I'm not in favor of GM cheating. Well, at least not against the players. But if you want,
cheat all the time.
They're stuck. They can't get into this room. The plot's in that room. They need to hack the door to get through. Don't even roll the dice. Because if you roll the dice, they might critically fail. Don't even roll them. Or if you've got a GM screen or something, or even just a hand, you just toss a die on the table and say, you're in. What's your skill? Okay, yeah, you made it.
You know what? One of my...
Mind the fact you rolled negative 25 on a D20. It's not even possible when it happened.
You know what my GM tool... And I really feel that this concept is a tool and not just a platitude. My story trumps the dice. If there is something I want to happen in my story, if there's something that the characters want to happen with them or in the story, and it's something that everybody wants, but the dice go against it, to me, and there are people out there who disagree with this, but to me, we're here for the role playing first. It's not game role playing, it's role playing game. Role playing comes first. The story comes first. The characters come first. And the game aspect of it, the dice, the mechanics and stuff, to me, that's secondary. And I know everybody thinks, oh, he's just some hippie, liberal, story stick kind of guy. It's like, you know, even if I was running a crunchy system, even if I was running a dungeon crawl, and whatever the goals of the players and the goals of myself were with that dungeon crawl, get more loot, get bigger stuff, do awesome things, whatever, that would trump the dice. It's all about ultimately what the players want. I mean, you don't pander to them and you don't pander to your story. You have to use your tricks. You got to use your illusion that you put up there. That's another tool too, is the one that we talk about all the time, is the illusionary aspect that GMs use. All those showmanship tricks that GM uses, where your plot, your story, all your hooks, all your everything is in town A and the players are at a crossroads and then they go to town B. The story and the plot is now in town B. Don't railroad them. Let them go to town B. They never knew. They never have to know.
But they have the illusion of choice.
And they have the illusion of choice. And you want them to have the illusion of choice. It's not even illusion. Yeah, they can go wherever they want. But I cannot plan in my head every single contingency in the entire world. If I want a complex and interesting plot, as the GM, I have things happen.
Right. So to put that in words, like I'm understanding, I think the tool there is GM flexibility, you know, be flexible.
Exactly.
You know, with that. So yeah,
I cannot stress enough how much self-protection a GM can generate with a piece of paper and a pen. Game masters, take your own notes during the game. If they walk into a town and you declare that the shopkeeper has this name and this personality, jot down a quick note on that. Mm-hmm. If you hear one of the players say, man, I can't wait until we get to Thurgard because I want to talk to this dwarf, make a note of that. That may be something you can develop into a fuller plot later on. Anything that occurs in the game that's worthy of memory for the sake of continuity or is an opportunity, write it down. You don't have to only write notes prior to the game. You can keep taking them during the game.
Okay, Dan. You know, I'm going to throw something else out as far as a GM tool here. And this is sort of an FTB one, the group template. And the reason I throw this out in sort of a questioning manner towards you, before we started this podcast, all the years that we've been gaming, we never used a group template.
We did. We stopped for too many years. The group template.
And we don't use it after either.
Well, yeah, that's and how many games have died because of it. But the group template.
And how many games went well because of
it? Yeah, say where that came from was going way back to like 1994 or 95. We figured out that a lot of the problems we were having was the plots and the parties became too nonsensical because you have five people who have nothing in common and no reason to work together, except they have this glowing, what we call the P stamp, marking them as players on their forehead.
Red dwarf style. They have all the players can see it. None of the NPCs can see it.
Yeah, there's thousands of people in this town, and you trust these five for no reason other than the fact that they're...
I even remember in those games, we would even say halfway out of character, does this guy have a P on his forehead? be like, yes, that's
what do you mean those games? We do that now.
Well, yeah.
When someone's out for a week, we talk about the pee disappearing from over their head.
But let's talk about other pregame things that we haven't talked about as much on the show. One is the pregame conversation, which we've talked about a little bit. And this is not just a group template, but sit down with your players and ask them questions like, look, what is it you guys want out of this game? We're playing a, let's just keep picking on D&D because it's easier. Playing a D&D game.
What edition?
Do you guys want, that may be a question.
Yeah.
That may be a question. Is there a particular edition you guys want? Do you guys want high fantasy, mid fantasy, low fantasy? Do you guys really want to get out a lot? Do you want an epic world changing plot? Do you want something more localized? What kinds of things are going to motivate you? Do you want to try your hand at managing a kingdom? You ask, sit down with these people, say, look, what is it you want out of the coming game?
And, you know, Dan, along those lines, I actually have on my list, too, the player side projects. Ask them as you're playing the game, what are your side projects? Because you're going to get an idea what's motivating their characters, because what they want to do in their off time has something to do with what they're interested in.
Not enough games I've played in have side projects. Not enough games and not enough characters where the GM actually takes an interest in what are you doing in between the times when you're saving the world.
You know, I think the biggest abstract thing I have listed on my list here, and a lot of these things are falling under it, is one thing you have in your toolkit is your players. Mm-hmm. Everything they're saying while they're playing it, everything you know about their motivations, both in character and out of character, all of that, if you're keeping track of it, if you're making notes on it, that's something you can use to hook them.
Well, and also look at their interest level in their own characters. If they give you a background, pick through that background, or in some cases, I have required this of my players. I'll say, look, you've got to give me at least a paragraph of background, and I want two or three things that are unresolved in your history. I want the missing uncle you can't account for.
The raging heroin addiction, the STDs.
All jokes aside, yeah. I don't know about the STD, but because I don't deal with those things in my games. But
how much of a plot hook can you throw out in that?
I have, though, played games with characters who are
my crotch is itchy.
Two other things. One, intellectual theft.
Important. Outrageously important. Completely, totally steal your ideas.
I am a big fan of coming up with original ideas, but here's the thing. First of all, there is a limit to everyone's creativity. No one is infinitely creative. Secondly, there are a lot of good ideas that have already been come up with. And third, when people are throwing things at you rapid fire, you may not be quick enough to come up with something completely original on the spot. Don't hesitate to steal a little bit from somebody else's book, somebody else's movie. Don't do it so transparently. It's
hell,
obvious.
Even the movies do it. Look at Avatar. It's a combination of Dances with Wolves and
Pocahontas.
How
many times have we seen Star Wars?
The hero's journey. I mean, how many times has Star Wars been seen prior to Star Wars being created? Yeah. I mean,
well, or Throne of Blood, which Star Wars.
I actually wrote this down on my list as every movie, book, video game, media you have ever experienced.
But
that is a resource.
The one thing I would say is I would recommend picking it apart in pieces.
Don't rip it off wholesale.
Because I have played through games where partway through the game, I'm like, this is the plot of Final Fantasy IX.
I played
that game, and it's like, wait a minute, what?
I've played with characters. I remember sitting in this guy's apartment, and we were playing a Star Wars game. I you not, it was Star Wars, and this guy starts describing his powers, and he's like, you know, I have this alien life form, and this alien life form is kind of a news, and it gives me this strength, and I can shoot ropes out of my hands. And I'm like,
Venom? In Star Wars?
Yes!
That's,
and it's like,
awesome.
I'm like, and I look at him, and his description was longer and more. His description wasn't as obvious, right? He was really kind of playing down the Venom thing, but he kept on describing. I look at him like, you're playing Venom? And he's like, yeah, I'm playing Venom. It's like, don't rip it off wholesale. I mean, I think that you could take, like in the Star Wars example, wouldn't it be cool to play a symbiote that was like this ooze that covered your body? Now, let's not have it drive you crazy and not
shoot webbing
and not, let's have it do other cool
and you
things.
You can also draw from your real life experience.
Like, and have ooze cover you. Real life.
Chris is not on this episode, but no, I mean, you can draw from your life experience. If they walk into a place and you need an NPC, draw from somebody you know they don't, or draw from somebody you know that you can change enough so they don't recognize who it is. The last thing I got on my list for Game Masters, before we get into some things that are either player-specific or bridge the two, and I think are useful to both, is what I call internal roleplay. What I mean by that is when I'm prepping a game, one of the things that I try to do, and this is particularly easy with my regular group where I know the people, is, all right, we've had the pregame conversation, we've got the group template, I write the plot, and I try looking like, okay, what are they going to do with this? And I try to, in my head, just imagine, I know the minute this pops up, so-and-so's probably going to do this, better write a contingency. You know, better write kind of some coverage for this. If they do this, you know, this guy's supposed to give them the plot.
What's a contingency you've written recently?
Oh man, this last game was nothing but contingencies. In our current Sunday game, I'm not real clear or wasn't real clear on what would motivate the group. And so I wrote in the course of one campaign, there were like four different plots in this one game, and they were all set up so you could only pursue one or the other. Some inconsistencies with some ship logs, mm-hmm. and it's like you can investigate that mystery. Dave's character's dad called him with a job offer. They could go take that. They came across some outdated intelligence files that may have had something interesting on it, which they could have tried and taken. There was a couple different things that you guys could have done, and these were all contingencies, so that in case you skipped one, no problem. 2, 3, and 4 are still in play. You know, those balls are still in the air so that you guys would have something to do. But I've written other contingencies like, okay, we're going to go in here. I know so-and-so is trigger happy. So if he shoots the plot giver, this is how I'm going to handle that. Yeah. Just write that contingency ahead of time.
I would get stuck in an infinite loop of trying to figure out what people are going to do, though, I think.
Well, all this in balance. I mean, you can overthink this. You can have analysis paralysis creating a game.
Well, I think that one of the important GM tools is the ability to juggle. A game is all about balance. It's all about keeping your player's attention while putting the spotlight on an individual player. It's about having this big, complex plot that you don't reveal every single last instance of it to your players, yet it can't be so complex to where you lose track of it. And it's about timing. It's about putting in cliffhangers. It's about not putting in too many cliffhangers. It's about all of these balls that you're juggling and keeping them each in the air. And you have to know thine self. You have to know how much you can juggle as a GM, how much you can take on, and not to have too much of that going on at one time. If your game is getting out of control, if you're just feeling overwhelmed, you have to think of it as juggling. Maybe don't juggle so much. You're having trouble with the plot complexity, but you still want to keep it complex. Okay, we're not really going to do player spotlight. We're not going to put a player in the spot. We're going to treat them all as a group. I'm not going to juggle that ball this session. Maybe I'll rotate that ball out. And that's what the GM tools are. Is that they're all balls in your toolkit, and you're taking them all and your GM and you're juggling each of them. And you have to know your limits and you have to know your level of skill as a GM. And the only way to do that is to run games, is to succeed and to fail and to get feedback from your players. And I will say that one more tool for the GM toolbox, unless anybody has anything else.
I have one more, but keep going. I'm going to flow off of yours, actually.
Is a community. A greater community than your gaming group. And the reason I say that is I look at the Fear of the Boot community. I look at our forums. And whenever we do a show, we have an episode review thread. And then people start expanding on our ideas. Or people start criticizing and tearing down our ideas that we say on the show. Or they come up with ideas that we didn't even think of and that I love incorporating into my game.
Yeah, I can't wait to see the threads on this episode alone.
People are going to come into this thread on our forums and they're going to say, well, this is what I have in my toolbox. This tool that you said, completely worthless to me because I run a game like this. And maybe you who are listening to this right now are trying to figure out what's in your toolbox, and you can go to the forums and you could see all these different, it's like going to a tool store. You know, you see all these different tools on the wall and you can start picking and choosing. And they're all free and they will all improve your game. And you can pick and choose what is right for you, what's right for your players, what's right for your story.
So you're talking about putting the players in the spotlight. I actually have one here that I've seen Chris do, and that's be willing to put yourself in the spotlight. If you're watching what everyone's doing, everyone's getting low key. Stand up, yell, get mm-hmm. in a voice, do something to draw attention to yourself. Because if you don't normally stand up, you don't normally yell, you don't normally whatever, and it comes out of the blue, you've got yeah. everyone's attention.
Well,
right
even that aside, or in addition to that, rather, attitude in general is contagious. Mm-hmm. And let's start bridging into things that work for both the GM and the player. Attitude is a big one. When you come to that game, if at all possible, and I realize we all have bad weeks, mm-hmm. come with a positive attitude, high energy, ready to game.
Yeah.
Be on topic. Don't be afraid to make a little bit of a fool of yourself. Don't be afraid to stand on a chair mm-hmm. and pretend you're an ogre like Chris yeah. did at Fear the Con 2. Yeah.
You know
it, because that type
left,
of thing,
laugh,
it is
lasting moment.
It is contagious. And the reverse is true as well. If you come in dour and quiet and agitated and bitchy, yeah. pretty soon you will kill that game session.
And not willing to play. I think that there's a lot of people who don't want to use voice. They don't want to stand up. They don't want to get in character. And I know I'm the hippie, liberal, storytelling, theater gamer. But I think that if you branch out and try a little bit of that, it turns the notch up on your game. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to do the ogre voice for every single yeah. ogre character you do.
Oh, no, it makes more impact if you don't. If
yeah,
you're the
totally.
Kind of guy that doesn't normally do that, and then you do that, yeah. everyone's looking
past
at you.
Three,
got it.
Past 3 weeks, the party has been dealing with nothing but ogres, all these ogres, all the time, and you're dealing with them, the plot's good, and the plot's good, and then they get to the Ogre King, and suddenly, you stand on the chair. You do the ogre voice. Your face is going to turn bright red. Your players are going to laugh at you, but you know what? They're going to remember. They're going to shut up. They're going to
so
listen.
You have their yeah. attention.
You have got them.
Let me give some simple ones that a trip to any Walgreens will take care of, yet they will do enormous things to help your game. Number one, a pocket calculator. Even yeah. for relatively rules-light games, okay, if you can't add 2d6 in your head, you probably have some kind of a mental disorder. But there are going to be times when you're going to need to evenly divide up the gold, figure out the XP, whatever. These games have a mathematical component. Go out to Walgreens, spend $2, and get a pocket calculator. There's one that I keep in my car.
We've got one in our group. We call him Dave. Well, or we actually are very lucky to have someone who's yes. very much he's an engineer. So immediately he's able to give us numbers, give us
well,
math.
Even most cell phones now will have a calculator. So you may not yeah. even need to buy one. Along those lines, another one is index cards. Or if not index yeah. cards, get a little mm-hmm. pocket notebook.
In fact, I even brought this up in last game. We need to have index cards. Because index cards are immensely useful. I can jot down notes without crapping up my character sheet. I can pass a note to the GM, or I can pass a note to a fellow player.
Yeah, and the great thing about index cards is one...
I could build a little house out of them when the spotlight's on someone else.
They yeah, help.
I don't know if index cards are for everyone, but for me, the passing notes is a great aspect of the game.
Love
that really
notes.
Gets me more into
well,
it.
Well, they're wonderful for many reasons. I
Do
mean,
you like my Aliens Clue Wicca? Yes or no? Check one.
Yeah, and then Pat's thinking we're planning to stab him in the back.
Well, yeah. that's just one.
I don't think
they,
I know.
No, they help build intrigue because when people are yeah. passing notes, nobody likes not being in on a secret. When you start passing those notes, people start paying attention. They think something's up. They think something's going on. They start trying to run through. What have they said? What's their angle? But unlike pulling someone aside, this doesn't interrupt the game. If Wayne wants to say something to Chad, and he starts talking, he may be talking over me trying to game master something. If he takes Chad off to a side room, I've now lost half the group until mm-hmm. they come back. But if he jots a note and passes it to him, or jots a note and passes it to me, the game keeps right on going. And a lot, I mean, it's so freaking cheap. Go out, spend the yeah. 79 cents on a stack of a couple hundred index cards.
I have to admit, we've used our phones to text each other things like this before, too.
Yeah.
It's better with the note cards, though, so you're not getting electronics out. It doesn't look like you're not paying attention.
Well, and they say they're less distracting. I also think the average person can probably write faster than they can text on a phone. Minis, maps, dry erase boards.
A packet of newsprint.
A packet of newsprint.
Newsprint is...
some way of setting the scene. Now, for some games, this comes pre-built. You may have a hex map or a square map, and minis, particularly the newer editions of D&D, are like this. Battletech was like this. Not every game is. But we had an issue in our last game where there were four ships that had arrived.
This is the most confusing thing in the world. I usually hate minis. God, I wish we had some Star Trek.
I know, and we were sitting there stuck.
Like, we used an almond.
Yeah, we literally did. We had an almond to represent. Because
almond was a space pod docked to the spaceship that was a D6.
Yeah.
And the almond was bigger than the ship.
There were four ships in a system, and we're trying to work through the order of events in which these ships had shown up, and they were kind of review the logs and piece together what had happened between these ships.
You know the sad thing I just realized?
We had paper
and pencil. Dan could have drawn it, set it on the table, and
One reason.
The sad thing is I just realized that I've drank 75% of a bottle that's 20% alcohol. So, Wayne, you're going to be driving my truck home, right?
Yeah, that's a good thing about port. It's nice and strong.
Yeah.
But I don't think it would have worked for one reason. It's not big enough. When you've got a fairly large table, and I think most gaming groups probably, at least I've been in, do play around fairly large tables, and you've got 5 or 6 people, an 8.5 by 11 with a bunch of little doodles on it. I mean, okay, that might work for setting one simple scene.
Yeah, it would have worked for this one individual scene.
You guys are here, the woods are here, the Klingons are over here. That's the setup. Okay, fine. 8.5 by 11 works perfectly. But if you've got a more complicated scene, you need something bigger. You need something people can see without constantly having to stand up, especially if the scene's changing. Well, we move over here and they move over here and we do this and they do that. Well, I mean, pretty soon, how freaking marked up is this piece of paper? And so having something, a dry erase board, a dry erase battle map.
I've always liked newsprint.
I say those big, you can go to any art store. What he's talking about is you get these, any art store, you can get these huge pads. I mean, they're like 2 foot by 3 foot of cheap ass newsprint.
Yeah, it's like the pulpiest pulp paper that paperbacks are printed on, and it's called newsprint.
Yeah, you just open it up, take out a Sharpie or anything, and draw something up on it.
I actually like those better than dry erase because I can draw out the layout for an entire castle, and all the guards are here, and this is and people start marking out. It's like, well, I'm moving here. And it's like, okay, so that's your battle plan. Okay, next page. We're going into the king's chamber, and then we have to flip back. Well, where's this tower again? Oh, it's right there. Where's a dry erase board? We've just erased the castle map to make the throne room map. We can't flip back
to it. And one of
the
great things I also do in addition to that is...
And you have a souvenir of the game.
Is to keep from having to mark up one drawing too much, bring minis. Even if it's not a mini game...
I hate minis.
Hear me out.
I hate them.
Even if it's not a mini game, even if you don't have squares and set movement... Mm-hmm. And I personally don't hate many games. Well, let's just say it's not that kind of game. It's still a great way to move people around the map. Say, okay, I'm behind this table. Now I'm over here. Without having what eventually looks like a football play diagram, X's and O's and arrows and things scratched out and whatever, to the point that nobody can read the damn thing anymore. You can just move these little pieces around. And unlike dice, which like we were using last game, it's a little more clear what's what. You don't have to remember that Wayne's the D20 and Pat's the D12. You can be, okay, Wayne's the old man wizard, and here's the old man wizard mini, and Pat's the knight, and there's the knight mini.
Yeah, I love minis. I think it's a very good tool. Also, I think this is a great one of your bridge tools, like you're saying, bridging between GM and player tools. Because for me, and I'm going to mention this later on, I think for players, tools are good that can help you get into the character. And I think this is one that definitely does that.
Well, Pat, what are some other tools that help you get in the character?
Well, as far as getting into character, the other thing that I like actually is something as simple as like a character sheet. You know, you might have a generic character sheet, but like if it helps you as a player to describe your character or whatever, you know, make your own. I had one character where I just made it from scratch. It was kind of cool. We actually did it on old parchment paper so that it looked old and like, you know, the old print, whatever.
You know, Pat,
that
might be weird, but character sheets are actually one of my favorite things about role playing. I love having that sheet in front of my hands.
No,
I filled everything out. I love filling them out.
I think that's, that is the character, so it's a really important thing.
Do you remember the character sheet of the game that we played in Paul's Basement Legendaries that he had made around the, I think it was the attribute box.
It was the character portrait box.
Character portrait box. It had a frame, right? Mm-hmm. And the frame was like this sort of pattern. You couldn't really tell what it was. And we asked him, like, what is that? And he's like, oh, it doesn't come out too well in the printer, but that's Paula Abdul naked.
Yeah.
And we're like, really? And then you kind of turned it sideways and looked at it. You're like, what, sure enough.
And what
Can I see the electronic version of this?
The very important thing we need to mention here is that's Paula Abdul 20 years ago naked.
Yeah.
Not
yeah.
Paula Abdul.
Yeah, not her drunken in the gutter or whatever it is.
Not American Idol Paula. Okay.
But you know what?
But anyway.
I will completely agree that anything that you can bring that helps get you into your character, that could be the character sheet. That could be what the character sheet's made on. That could be a character portrait. You know, there are a lot of places online. If you do a search on RPG character portrait, there are a lot of artists who, for a very minimal fee, I'm talking like $20-$25, will doodle up a picture of your character.
Man, Google or image search.
Yeah, exactly.
Is the
Google
ultimate
image
tool.
I think a great character sheet, you know, and you can make homebrews. Yeah. I've seen many, many homebrew character sheets where they've got, like you're saying, a character portrait box, but not just, you know, where you freehand it, because I can't draw beyond stick figures.
Yeah.
So you go out and you find Google's image search, you find something, and then you print that out on the sheet, and then you fill it in yourself.
As a player, I also have my moments as then, just like Chad was talking about the game master. When I write up a character, I try not to make the 20-page packets, because that's just as confusing to a player as a 200-page packet is to a GM. But what I try to do is maybe write just like a half page of background and a paragraph or two of personality.
Mm-hmm.
And I bring that with me. And before each game, I will review that. I will have my moment of zen to kind of try and remember, to get into the groove of this character, to be ready to act the part. I mean, the same way you hear stories about, like, when they were filming the Lord of the Rings movies.
Yeah.
Where they would be sitting there at the catered lunch eating hero sandwiches or whatever in character.
Yeah.
That they never broke character until the end, where the guy that played Wormtongue weirded them all out, because apparently he was some super thick, drawled Texan.
Mm-hmm.
And he had been playing this part of Wormtongue so perfectly. He's like, well, y'all, that was a great filming session. I'll see y'all later. And everybody's like, what the?
Was it Brad Dourif? I think it's... I forget. He's been another kid. He's great.
If you've ever seen him outside of the movie, I mean, the one time I saw him was like cowboy hat, mustache, kicking boots. I mean, but my point being that, just like the GM does, I have this moment of characters now. It's like, okay, review my character, kind of get into the groove of who he is, what he's all about, try to remember what happened last game, get myself into that zone. The character sheet can help with that.
Mm-hmm.
I am not against, in fact, I really, in my own games, should probably make better use of things like little props. Talked about this before. If somebody finds some gold pieces, go out and buy some cheap little plastic toys.
Energon.
Yeah, well, the Energon in the Transformers game that we did at Fear the Con.
Bullets in Skies of Glass.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, but people love having little tangible things, because it helps keep you in the moment. And these are great tools to use around the table.
You know, you mentioned the moment of zen for the player beforehand. For me, that's the drive over to the house where we're gaming. So on the way over, I'm thinking about my character. I'm thinking about what I want out of the character. And I'm trying to get that thought process going. I'm trying to get into character on the drive over, because it's quiet time where there's nothing going on and I'm just driving over there.
You know what's weird for me is on the drive over, and I think I've said this on the podcast before, for me the drive over is I'm thinking about all the other things I could be doing instead of gaming. It's really weird. It's like and I'm not even running the game. It's like, oh, I can't run the game. Oh, I suck. But it's more like, gaming could be really boring tonight. I could be playing video games. I could be watching a movie. I could be doing this. And then,
Chad, it's probably a good thing you and I don't text message more often, because we would probably talk ourselves gaming every single week. It'd be like, man, I could be playing Mass Effect right now.
and you know, the weird thing is, I love gaming. I mean, obviously, I wouldn't be doing this if I didn't. And then when I get into gaming, I love it and I enjoy it. I love role-playing it. But for some reason, it's just how my mentality is set up. From the 20 minutes it takes to get from my house to Dave's, I'm thinking, I really don't want to do this. I could be doing all these other things. Oh, God. Gaming again this week. Gaming again. But then it's fun. It's great. I have a great time.
Let me toss out another one. I guess this is more game master than player, but it really affects everyone, that I think is kind of useful. One of the most difficult paperwork things to do in a game, because of the fact that it can involve a lot of parties and it is not something you can prepare ahead of time, is tracking initiative. Let's say you've got five players and they're taking on...
That's why I like doing team initiative. It just keeps it simple.
I agree with you. Well, that's depending on the system. Because some systems have a team initiative where side A goes, then side B goes. Or you do something like Battletech, where side A has five people, side B has 10. Side A wins initiative. Side A sends one person first. side B sends two, side A sends one, well, side B sends
or
two.
Or it doesn't work out.
And you kind of alternate until...
It's... Or it doesn't work out if the system is incredibly brutal, where, okay, side A wins initiative and slaughters team B in the first round.
Right. You know, but in some games, you have individual initiative.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found a couple ways to help track that. One of the easiest things to do is you just keep the initiative roll next to the person, especially, and this works out really well if you have minis, or if you don't have minis, you leave it in front of the person. They roll a d20 or whatever for their initiative, or you can just use a d20 or a percentile dice or something to represent it. Pat rolls an 11 for initiative. We take a die that's not going to be used for anything else. I put it in a particular place in front of it, says 11. I can see it right there. It's a little bit of an arts and crafts project, but one thing I've seen some GMs do is they'll go out and they'll get something magnetic. They will. I say they'll get little magnets because you.
You just stop Pat from talking.
You can get little adhesive magnet strips, cut them apart, put them on the back of something that's dry erase, and you can basically, as people roll initiative, you write down, okay, guard A got a 12, you put him down. Well, Pat beat him, got a 15, so you put Pat over the guard, and then you could just rearrange those little things on this metal surface or whatever you have until you've got them all set up. And there are a bunch of solutions.
Here's another idea going on those lines, Dan. But going back to our index card ones, one of the things Chris did at Fear the Con 2 was he had all of our character names written down on, you know, note cards after we gave him our names. And he had his characters, his, you know, the bad guys we were going to be fighting on note cards. And he would just put them all in order. So he would be going through, okay, top one on the stack, Wayne, you're going now. Flip that over. Okay, you're going now.
That's another simple tool to keep people in the moment. Is one of the things I have as a game master, and this is typically the top sheet I have in front of me. It's not my plot. My plot's usually the second page down. The top sheet I have in front of me is a list of all the character names for the PCs. The reason being, I have found it has a huge impact on the game if instead of addressing Chad, I address him by his character's name. You know, instead of saying Chad, the mayor walks up to you and says, Chad, I need... No, he walks up to you and says, Blackleaf, I need you to help me. Such as
Fatleaf. That's a...
I don't know if anyone saw me doing that, but I did that as a player in the Skies of Glass game. I took a sheet of paper and I wrote down everyone's names. You know, I put Chad, Dash, and then Stan was his name.
I mean, that's what Dave is doing in our current game. He can't remember anybody's name. In fact, Dan had to make him a cheat sheet with all the NPC's names because he couldn't keep them straight, but... He would move cups out of the way to look at your character sheet. And he's like, oh, hey, Olin, Dr. Olin, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and I've done that too.
And I appreciate that.
Now, we've danced around this a while because I was going to mention this earlier, because this is another one of the tools that I think is that players need to do is essentially it all boils down to take notes. You say it's important as a GM. It's equally as important for a player whenever you're doing something, whenever the GM tells you this barkeep or this blacksmith or this whatever in the town that may be of note, write that down. Somebody in the party needs to take some notes. I don't like to do it myself. I hate it, and I'm bad about doing it. So I don't want to be the note taker for a session, but somebody really needs to, because it's important. Because well, then next week when we get back together again, we're trying to say, well, what happened last week? And it's like, well,
is that
we did
example?
This one thing, or I don't remember what did happen. Does anybody remember? Somebody can open up a book and boom, we can, you know.
Is that an example of how games have changed from the 80s to now? Because it used to be that the unwanted position was the person who drew the map.
Well,
now the unwanted position is the person who has to keep track of the plot. Less map now? I think that's great.
I'm not sure.
Maybe, but what I was going to say that you hit on with that is this is one of the things, because I think a lot of the things we've mentioned are going to depend on the game, depend on the game system, depend on the group, depend on the person. This particular point, I think, will apply to the vast majority of people listening for two reasons. One, it works in any game style. If you're playing Clear and Loot Temple of Elemental Evil, it helps.
I hate you.
It helps to have somebody who's keeping a rough map of the place. If you're playing something that's super political and plot and intrigue and whatever, it helps to remember who said what clues were dropped. Throughout most of my gaming group years, Mike Kay, who the former host of the show, he used to keep the notes, because I'm the type of game master, when somebody says something, it probably has significance. When you stumble across that little excerpt of a ship log, it probably means something. So he would take those notes. The other thing it did, it is a great pushback to the game master, because the fact that you are willing to put forth that effort says to me, you care. Mm-hmm. And as stupid and hallmark as that sounds, I mean, think about that for a second. The biggest thing a game master does not want is for their game to flop. And when you've got people writing down things you say and thinking about them and discussing them and swapping emails during the week, or even having, without you telling them to, on their own, having a powwow to review what happened last week.
That's why it's so great working with Wayne. That's the most recent example, because our current game's only two games in, was our Skies of Glass game and our rotating GM game, for that matter. We sit right next to each other. Every single day we're talking about this freaking game and about the ins and outs. And it's like, oh, what about this character? What about this character? In fact, we overanalyze the games a lot of times.
But it shows
it's great.
It shows an investment. I mean, when I see somebody sitting there jotting down notes, it says to me they care.
Mm-hmm.
It says that I have captured their attention and that these things to them are worth remembering.
Okay.
Yeah. And I don't know why I quit doing it either, because the Skies of Glass game, I did it every game. And then we got into the rotating GM game, and there wasn't a reason to do it there.
Well, I remember what we talk, you know how we talk about games during the course of the week.
Yeah.
What we talked about changed. We talked about what we were going to use in our current game in our game when it came around to us.
Yeah. And so that may have been the big difference.
The conversation changed. Now, I don't have the notes in front of me, and I'm not the roundtable moderator here, but, you know, I've had half a bottle of port, so I'm feeling pretty
more than half.
Yeah, a lot more than half. I want to get egotistical for a moment.
No.
Uh-oh.
Hey, screw your
not
face.
You and not on this show.
What about podcasts? Our RPG podcast, should that be a part of people's toolbox, whether you're a GM or player? Because when we first started podcasting, there weren't very many RPG podcasts out there. There were 10, 15, and a lot of them were already pod-faded. Others of them were not of the greatest quality. Some of them were really, really good, like Dragon's Landing and stuff were really, really good. But nowadays, there's tons of RPG podcasts out there. There's so many. The niche has exploded.
I think, yes, absolutely. But I think in some way, we've already covered this. And I think this is maybe where what we need to address here is a perception. You said that one of the greatest resources a role player has is the broader community, because this bigger community, whatever form it is, whether it's our forum or another forum or multiple forums you're tapped into,
blogs,
yeah,
or
it's a
podcasts,
great
yeah.
place to get ideas from other people, to cherry pick what works and doesn't work, to say, look, hey guys, I'm stuck in my current game. How do I deal with this guy? What do I do with this situation?
Yeah.
Get ideas from other people. But
we've even had people tell us that they take an episode of ours, and I know people take episodes of other podcasts that deal with a specific problem that is going on in their group, or that can help their GM, or can help, or the GM can help the players. And they say, okay, guys, I want you to listen to this episode because this episode deals with this problem, whether it's our podcast
right.
or not.
But I think what I would say is that podcasts, blogs, gaming magazines, that's all part of that community.
Yeah.
I mean, these are just the resources, the stuff that's put out by the community, as opposed to a more, I guess, intangible discussion like a forum. But it's the exact same thing. You're still tapping into a community of other players.
Mm-hmm.
It's no different than going down to the gaming shop and asking the two guys behind the counter what they think. But my point being that I think it's something we've already talked about, which is it's tapping into that broader community. Yeah, people tell us all the time, you know, they tune into our show, some stuff they like, some stuff they find completely inapplicable to their game or they completely disagree with, which is great. That's fine.
Yeah.
The beauty of gaming is its diversity.
Exactly.
If everybody agreed with us, and quite frankly, this
there'd
would be
no point.
It'd be a boring hobby.
Yeah. There would, if every single person agreed with how we did things, I would say we need to shut the show down. There's no point in continuing. Yeah.
There is no right and wrong, except for Chad is always wrong.
Yeah.
And Chad's view is, if you're having fun, you're doing okay. So screw everybody.
That's right.
Again, Pat has a priceless look on his face that no one can see.
If you could just let the laugh out instead of holding it in.
Pat.
Makes better audio.
Player tool.
The other tool that I was thinking of that sort of falls in line with the things that you're talking about is some sort of a cheat sheet. And this is sort of like system specific, whatever you've got.
I would like to have just a little, like a one page thing that could help me with, say, the system that I'm in, or maybe it was a listing of the, especially in Battletech. Battletech was a great example because they had one where it was basically one sheet that had all the typical weapons that you had on there, and what
the
they
two
did
hit modifiers,
and
the hit location, exactly. Chances are
that
critical.
Was, and in fact, that's where I learned it. I'm like, oh my God, this is awesome. I've got everything I need on one page.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I started doing that for other games. I would make them myself.
I actually put it on my character sheet sometimes. What I need to roll to attack, I'll throw that on the bottom left hand. I'll make like five or six things.
And you know, you can do it. And you, like you said, do it in Excel, do some kind of a form. I would do it, you know, so I could print it up and I'd have it say front and back on a sheet. I'd do that and then laminate it so that it could be, you know, right there on the table in a, you know, quick reference. And again, it's for me, that's something that as a player, quick reference, I can do it quickly and keep the flow of the game going.
And what goes on there is going to vary from system to system and game to game. But I think you can apply a pretty easy 80-20 rule where there's probably charts, flows, outlines, something that's specific to that system you have to look up on a regular basis and really help you to have right in front of you. I've seen people do it in D&D with their spell books where they have not just the name of the spell, but the level spell and maybe like a one sentence description of just generally what it does.
Yeah.
Helps them pick their stuff on the fly. This is one of the things that in our episode on DM screens, we all agreed was great, was the use of the DM screen for notes, for quick reference. I mean, it was the one of the few functions we all agreed was useful, was this quick reference. And players can do this as well.
Yes.
You know, players can have the exact same sort of thing.
To end the show, I cannot wait to see what other people come up with for their tools on our forums.
I was excited about this, but now that we're recording it, I'm more excited to see what other people are using that we didn't even think of.
And I'm going to totally rip them off.
Yeah,
absolutely. For me, I'm most excited about the player tools because that's the thing. I think that we had a whole lot of GM tools, I think, and the player tools,
and
not
some
as
of those
many
can
because,
be used by players too.
So I'm anxious to see what other people, you know, some of the players, what they use and what their ideas are.
I think that a lot of people are going to start talking about online, like mapping tools, online tools. I think that people are going to come to our forums and start talking about a lot of the technology that goes into role-playing.
That was
games.
One thing I specifically avoided in this episode was technology stuff because of the fact that it blurs a little bit too much into online gaming, which is a subject I think we covered like way back, like episode 16.
I think that's something that we need to come back to.
We need to do it with John.
We need to do it with John because he's running an online game right now. But that's why I didn't get into that. I know there are a ton of mapping tools, dungeon builders, character sheet generators. I know there are gobs and gobs and gobs of computer programs or online tools we just didn't cover. That was actually somewhat by design. But that's not to say, once again, I like Chad. I'm really excited to see what people come back with. And if that's part of your repertoire, then by all means, get in on the discussion. Yep. If you think we missed something important, then here's your opportunity to tell people what it is we missed. I want to close out on something of a non sequitur, which is a friend of the show, a guy who runs Robertson Games, and I'll link this in the show note. They're doing a contest right now to design a dungeon one room at a time. What they are asking is for people to design a single room of a dungeon that's as creative as a single room can be.
I'll create the dungeon room. It's an entire room that has a whole dungeon in
Well,
it.
Well, there's limits
the
on it.
Dungeon.
There's limits on it. It's got they've got parameters where it can only be of a certain size, whatever. Be of monsters, puzzles, whatever. Just the most creative room you can come up with. And they've got a list of criteria and a list of a pretty good list of prize support and stuff for this. And I think their intention is to eventually chain this together into one big fan-created dungeon, which I think it'll be kind of fun to see the result of that. If you're interested in getting in on that, I will link this in the show notes. There are several friends of the show over there. So by all means, stop by, see what these guys are doing. And if you've got that one great room, then here's your chance to kind of show your chops. So,
yep. And I've had too much to drink. So Wayne, you're driving.
And Chris, if you're listening, fix your laptop. We miss you.
That's right.
I don't miss him.
Oh, and check the show notes for one last surprise. I'm going to link at the end of the show. I won't even tell you what it is. I'm just going to link it because it's funny as hell. So I'll catch you guys next time.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2010. Listeners are free to use the show in a non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.